Welcome to the Omaha Forum, a production of KIOS. This series explores the significant topics and issues of our region with leaders, thinkers, and influencers from around Omaha and throughout Nebraska. Today's presentation features Kate Folsom, the Editor-in-Chief of Nebraska Examiner, and Matt Wynn, Executive Director of Flatwater Free Press. This event was recorded live at the Omaha Press Club on Tuesday, June 16th, and has been edited for time.
At least once a month here at the Press Club, the Press Club sponsors a noontime educational forum on issues we think of our interest to our members and to the public at large. One doesn't have to be a member of the Press Club to attend, but we'd like to welcome all of you who are here in person and our radio audience who's on KIOS FM radio. At your table there are paper and pencils, and during the presentation, if you have some questions, please write those down and somebody will pick them up. We will do all the questions and answers from here so that both get on the radio and we'll pick up. Today's topic is centered on the changing world of journalism. I was thinking this morning, I think it was the New York Times who used to have the phrase, all the news that's fit to print. And now it seems like a lot of times we have fits, but they're because of what's printed. And I think, so things are changing quite a bit. And it looks much different now than it did 5 or even 10 years ago. And it's a turbulent time for journalism. And our speakers will speak to that. Kate Folsom, who is the Editor-in-Chief of the Nebraska Examiner, and Matt Wynn, who's the Executive Director of the Nebraska Journalism Trust, which operates Flatwater Free Press and Silicon Prairie News. Kate spent more than 40 years in daily journalism, the bulk of that time with the Omaha World Herald, working in various roles, including features writer, copy editor, Washington Bureau reporter, and editorial page editor. Kate is a winner of She's a winner of numerous award-winning reporting efforts, including investigations into state officials that resulted in resignations and reforms in state law. Matt was editor on the investigative desk at USA Today, where his investigation into proliferation of model bills in state houses gained him the prestigious Goldsmith Prize for investigative journalism. Prior to that, he was director of investigative and enterprises at MedPage Today. The turbulence in journalism certainly is evident, and Kate and Matt both believe that it's also a very exciting time and that we still need strong journalism schools. So with no further ado, welcome, please, Matt and Kate.
We end up talking to groups together quite a bit these days. But I'll just tell you first a little bit about the Examiner. I actually retired from the World Herald at the end of 2019 and was retired for 2 years and then somehow got pulled back into journalism at the end of that time and launched the Nebraska Examiner in last January, a year ago. And I never had really focused very much on nonprofit journalism, but I was really seeing the need for continued ways to provide news to our readers. And I just think it's so important that we keep strong journalism alive for our society. So I have a staff of 3 full-time reporters. We also have an intern who's doing a great job, and that's our little crew. We report mostly on state issues, state government. We also home in a lot on housing and labor, some development stories, and then a random feature that just cries out to us. We publish 6 days a week and sometimes 7, which it's kind of tiring, actually. But I try to tell my reporters, you don't have to do that. And they're just, it's like, it's in their notebook. It's in, they got a tip. They've got to follow it up. And so they just go, go, go. So that's just a, and I should say also, we are part of a broader network. So it's not just a four-person, five-person crew out there. We're affiliated with States Newsroom, which is a national 501c3. It's based in Chapel Hill and has offices in Washington. And their goal is to kind of plant these four-person newsrooms in as many states as possible. And we were the 26th in Nebraska. Now they're up to 33 and counting. Their goal is to get to 40 at the end of next year. And then in the other 10 states, they have partnerships with other nonprofit news outlets there. So like Texas or California, it's like, what can a four-person newsroom do, really? But they partner with other organizations.
It's funny to talk about this stuff here. It's 2023 in Nebraska. Nonprofit news started in 2009, right? That's when nationally things like ProPublica got started. That is when the Texas Tribune launched. That is when several other regional things covering cities or entire states took off and started saying, hey, look, the business model collapsed. Journalism's still important. We're still going to do it. And so, bless their hearts, we're now able to kind of stand on the shoulders of giants and look at what worked, what didn't work, and finally bring it to Nebraska. So, you know, 2009 is when this stuff started nationally. 2019 is when I started having conversations with folks in Nebraska about how to do it here, how to fund this, how to support it, with the understanding that something had to give, right? We had it, it still was important. We still had to have people telling stories, doing important, meaningful journalism. And we found a way to make that happen, and we've been at it since 2021. So we're about to have, 2 years here in July 1st. Our model, I think both of us share the same model, which is, there's different ways to phrase it. I've said platform agnostic a lot, and someone was already talking to me about this a bit, what that means. We do stories, we run them on our website. That is true. We put them out on our social media, on our Twitter, on our Facebook, on our Instagram, these sorts of things. And then we also give it to everybody who might possibly want it. World Herald will run our stuff, the Lincoln Journal Star. It'll be on KIOS. It'll be on KFAB. It'll be on 1110 in Lincoln. It'll be on News Channel Nebraska. We try to be everywhere all at once. The other way to say that, though, I say platform agnostic. Someone else said, well, really, you're talking platform specific, right? You're not a newspaper, you're not a radio station, you're not a TV station, but you can find a way that works on all of those and get those stories out there. That's our model. That's how we do what we do. Talk a little bit of our newsroom. We've got 6 full-time staffers right now. We've got a fellow, well, 2 fellows, actually. We've got an operations director. We're bringing on an advancement director. We're going to be at 13 FTEs across editorial and the other stuff by the end of the summer here. So that's where we're at.
And just to give you a few numbers about what we're talking about, why we think it's important that more of these operations bubble up, and I think they will. The Pew Center did a study, and these are a little dated, but not too bad. But from 2008 to 2018, there was a 47% decline of jobs at newspapers. And the number of newspapers covered with statehouse reporters dropped 25% from 2014 to 2022. So that's the scary thing. I think that's what encouraged me to come back, because if you have fewer reporters, you have less news. By definition, you do not have so many people out there examining what our government is doing with our money. And so I think we both think it's really important for democracy to understand and reveal what's going on in our government.
Yeah, I will say we run Flatwater Free Press, we run Silicon Prairie News. Flatwater Free Press was our first volley. That's the thing that I've been cooking up for years and years. And the vision there was, God, when things get tough in traditional newsrooms, the first stuff to go is the hard stuff. It's investigations, because you're paying somebody full-time to dig into something that may or may not result in a story that's going to require a lawyer, who do not work cheap, to look at the thing before it publishes. And that's going to, again, at the end of the day, there might not be anything there. They might spend 6 months on a thing, spin their wheels, and decide they can't do it. That remains vital. That is journalism at its most important. That is That's got to be around. We've got to find a way as a society to support that. I believe in that. The other part, though, let's see, how do I say this in a radio-friendly way? If you are only doing that, you're kind of a jerk, right? That's no way to build a product. And so we wanted to do the other side thing, too. We wanted to have the yin to the yang, the flip side of that coin, choose a pithy metaphor. And so we also do something that I think places like the World Herald did for a long time, just really good stories about people in Nebraska, things that we can be proud of, things we can identify with, things that we can point to and say, that's why I live here, that's what we've got going on, you can brag about to your friends. I think we've got to have that shared identity. We've got to hold truth to power, we've got to be willing to call balls and strikes and call people out when they're out of line, and we've got to be able to lift up people who need to be celebrated. And I think that's a product that works. Silicon Prairie News, then, is historically it's been for startup kind of high growth businesses as they're getting off, and we want to continue to respect that. I also think it can do more feature stories and sort the like for our business community across this state. We're about 3 months into that. It's going well. It's a success. And we're looking at other titles, other projects, other things that we might be able to put under our umbrella.
Another thing that you need to know about nonprofit journalism is that we see this as a public service. You know, traditional journalism is a business, and but we see the journalism part of that as a public service, regardless of where it appears. But that's the neat thing that, you know, Matt mentioned this, and it's true for the Examiner as well, because it's a public service. Our product is available to be reprinted or rebroadcast free of charge. We don't charge a thing. And so some of these, we get picked up, I would say 150 times roughly a week by newspapers, you know, Grand Island Independent, Kearney Hub, that level of newspaper, Scotts Bluff, North Platte, and by broadcast stations. And so to me, that you see how that spread really grows and multiplies in terms of who's reading our stories. I was kind of proud, I guess, during the legislative session, I'd be listening to the senators talk on the floor, and almost daily they would say, well, the Nebraska Examiner said today whatever it was, and it's like, hey, that's kind of cool.
It is wild. I mean, I think both Kate and I come, you know, I wanted to work in newspapers my entire life. I thought that's what I was going to do, come to the World Herald and be there till I was 70 and then be done and go golf with Bob. That was not to be. And I think one thing that's been, we were just talking about this the other day, we started websites, right? We just kind of willed websites into the world, and the traffic that we were able to get, the eyeballs on them, the work is good enough that we're reaching these massive audiences right from the jump, right? We have thousands of people who read every single word that we publish. That's, we get really scared, right? This is a scary time for a lot of reasons, and it can be demoralizing to think about problems in this industry and cuts and that sort of thing. But I'll tell you what an opportunity, what an exciting thing to be able to just will something into existence and have it work, have it hit pay dirt, have people on the legislative floor talking about your work, have it change laws, have it, you know, this can happen. We don't need all that kind of legacy, you know, important legacy institutional value that I thought we would need to make this stuff work. You can just let the work speak for itself, and that is an extraordinary opportunity.
Do we have anything else to say?
Yeah. I mean, both Kate and I get pretty wound up about this stuff, I'll tell you, so we can fill any airtime you have, but I fear we'll get way down in the weeds. You know, this is about societal trust in institutions and all that sort of stuff. We are about telling people how things work and how they can work better, and that knowing it is the first step. We have to have that done, and I'm so glad. I really think, you know, we launched in September 2021. You guys were January 2022,
yes.
Right? And I think that we're just the bleeding edge. I think there's going to be so many more. I think small towns are, you know, where these newspapers have been just decimated, where they never had a local radio station. I think they're going to find a way to get involved in this stuff. I think that I really believe this is the future for unbiased news and information. And with that, we'll turn to questions. Well,
yeah, and I'll, one of the first questions I will ask, in talking with Chris Allen, who was on our committee and journalism instructor at UNO, the numbers of students going into journalism is down. So how are you going to be able to continue your job unless those numbers get back up? And how do we convince students that this is a viable place to be?
Well, I think just the fact that you see two in Nebraska, of all places, you know, two successful ventures, I think it's been inspiring for journalism instructors and students to see that, yeah, there is a future out there. So I think the more that happens, the more they'll be drawn back. I certainly hope so.
There's no better job on the face of the freaking planet. You get to go be curious and ask people whatever you want to know. Well, my God, who wouldn't want to do this work? But I think as an industry, we have done a really terrible job historically of telling our own story. We tell other people's story. We got that. We understand what that looks like. We do not tell our own. And especially when it comes to attracting the next generation, we've got to get better about that. We have to be more purposeful about that. We can't expect that people are just going to understand how this works, why it works that way, how it can be done better. You know, we've got to tell our own story a little more. And I think, you know, the Press Club has a role there. I think certainly the Nebraska Journalism Trust, I think all of us have to work on that front. I will also say, though, at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, whatever they're called, College of Journalism and Mass Communication, they had the highest increase in enrollment last year of any school at that college. So it's easy to talk doom and gloom, but the fact of the matter is this work does kind of, it's attractive. It remains attractive. And the more we can, if we can focus on that and tell that story more, we'll only benefit.
Yeah, it's, State's Newsroom is very serious about training, helping train the next generation of journalists. And we have quite a few internships. I'm on my second one now, and I don't want to let him go because he's really a great guy. But they also have fellowships, and they work through a variety of organizations to help hire and train young journalists.
One last thought on this question. I do think that, you know, at the end of the day, the number of journalists in Nebraska has been halved over the past 20 years. Wow, why would you ever go into that industry? And I think that's what I'm so excited about both of us doing. We're able to say, oh, here's 20 new jobs that were not there. For years, for decades, the story of this industry has been cutting and losses and layoffs and all that sort of stuff. And we have changed that narrative. And that might, you know, that's good.
A couple of related questions, I think. One, how has cable news shows changed journalism? And then the related question, do you think that non-biased reporting will ever make a national comeback?
Well, it has at the Nebraska Examiner.
Yeah, I think there's some, you know, I think a lot of our societal ills can be traced back to the launch of cable news, just to take that baton off the ground. I don't think it was ideal to pretend that we've got 24 hours a day that we can fill with stuff happening. There's not that much happening. When you get to it, you're going to start injecting opinion. That's just what we've done. We've run into our corners. But I think we haven't thought hard enough about how much impact that has. When our news is talking to kind of these burnt ends of society, these 10% over here and the 10% over there, the 80% of us, I presume, us in the middle, are kind of left lost and not there. And I think all of us feel that. These 10% are really loud. They're really out there. They are very good at making their voices heard, but they're not really representing anybody. And I think that news has fallen into the trap of thinking because they're loud, they matter. And that's not the case.
I do think that you have all this strife and turmoil and noise going on nationally, but that's why I really have always been proud to work in local journalism, because I think that is where you can make such a difference, and I think that we're more trusted than national journalists. We're in our communities, and we're writing about our communities, and I think that's so important to distinguish between the two types.
Great point.
Which brings about the question, you both have growing staffs. Are they all located in one location, or are they across the state?
Well, we have an office in Lincoln, a couple blocks from the Capitol. I have one full-time reporter and my intern who are based in Lincoln, and then I have two reporters, as well as myself, who are based in Omaha. So I don't get to Lincoln as often as I thought I would, especially during the legislative session when action started at 9 in the morning and ended at 9 at night. I was like, no thanks, I'm not driving 2 hours on top of that. So I'm pretty remote. And Cindy Gonzalez and Aaron Sanderford are both based in Omaha. They go to Lincoln and would love to go beyond Lincoln when they can. And now that we have some breathing room, I hope that happens. Paul Hamill is based in Lincoln, and he's written about the legislature and state government for decades. And Zach Wendling is just this wonderful, I can't call him a student anymore, he just graduated, but he's a young journalist who's extremely bright. He's kind of like Matt. I look at these two guys and I think, okay, whatever you say, because you're smarter than I am. But that's good. You want to have people who are smarter than you are when you're running a news staff.
I knew Zach when he was a student, and that is a disservice to Zach. Zach is so much smarter than me. Our staff, we have two offices. We have one in Lincoln. We have one here in Omaha. My staff is mostly based here in Omaha. We do have a Lincoln reporter. We do also have a Sequest Greater Nebraska reporter who, her entire job is to get in her car and drive places and tell those stories. She had a story today from Seward, which is, you know, I guess technically Greater Nebraska, but she's also done them from Norfolk and from further west in the state. She's been around. She's got those things lined up weeks in advance. We're also open to it. Anytime that we post any job, we'll say the geographic requirements, and we never say Omaha. We never say Lincoln. We say Nebraska. We do a lot of hiring from outside the state, so we just had a woman move here from Maryland. She could move anywhere she wanted to. We didn't put any constraints on her. She was able to pick that, and I like that. I think that's part of how we're going to have to build this next phase.
So a related question, I guess. Tell us about how you are funded, and whether it's individual contributions or paid for your stories or what. You mentioned that you give the stories out, so.
Right, no, we're part of a 501c3, so it's all nonprofit, it's donations and grants, donations from across the nation, as well as our readers here who might give one gift, they might give a monthly gift or so forth. State's newsroom publishes the names of anyone who gives 500 or more on their website, so that's all very transparent.
Yeah, same boat for us, transparency. I think any of these nonprofit newsrooms, we're based on transparency. That's a core belief, and so you'll find, yeah, if somebody gives us some money, we're gonna put their name on the website, and we make that very clear to our donors as they come through. You can find all of them. I'll be honest with you, our makeup is, we aim for 25, 25, 25, you know, four parts. Major gifts, foundations, supporters, people give monthly or annually or just one-off, and then kind of events or corporate sponsorships, that leg. We are not there yet. We remain heavily, not as heavily as we once were, but foundations are still almost half, you know, and then the other pieces are coming online as we grow. But that's the goal. The other, again, the beauty is in 2009, these things started, we're able to just kind of copy and paste what worked for them. What is the mix? What should we be aiming for? And what is a realistic goal? So far, so good on that front.
A little longer question. Beyond reliance of others to pick up your stories and channel agnostic specific in mind, what other forms of communication are you pursuing? News articles, video, social media posts, and what formats are you pursuing to expand visibility and organically?
We try to be everywhere. So we had a story that we put out today, and we put it on our website at 6 a.m. That's how we work. By 7 a.m., that was on Twitter, that was on Facebook, I believe. I go onto Reddit whenever I wake up, and I post it there. Today, that was not necessary because someone else had already put it there. Our media partners are grabbing that stuff in real time. So I saw 1011 in Lincoln already has it, a couple others so far. We do some video content, online video content. We do, you know, I guess that works as audio as well. But with all of these things, the point is to funnel it back to the written word or the video or whatever the core content piece of content actually is. if that helps answer the question.
Yeah. I mean, we have a website, and as I say, we publish almost daily. Sundays, I try to take a rest. except I have to do the Monday newsletter. We distribute a newsletter, and I put all of our content in that. We're on Facebook and Twitter. I would like to expand that at least to Instagram. We have done less with video and audio than I had hoped, but it's just been a scramble, and that's something that I'd like to build on. I'd also love to have another reporter, so I'm trying to make that happen so that all of us have a little breathing room.
A comment from one of our questioners said, I really enjoy investigative stories, but there just aren't enough of you. And I guess, so playing off that, I know that the Nebraska Examiner broke the story about the Senator Slama and
Charles Herbster.
Herbster. And when you do those kinds of stories, do you get any backlash from any people? And how do you deal with it?
Beyond the weird memes that I turned into and being told I was part of a spider's web. I don't know. No, of course we get backlash, and you just work through it and keep going. It's about all we can do.
Yeah, I think there's definitely backlash. There's also pro-lash, and there's also weird readings into your motives, right? They'll say that it's politically biased. I'll bet it wasn't. Knowing you, we worked together. There's no way that was politically biased. But as long as you are, you know, that's why the process matters. That's why you have to go in things and do the journalistic process and examine your own biases and make sure that you're accounting for them and all that sort of stuff. So when you put out that product and you start taking these slings and arrows, you can rest assured you're bulletproof.
Since your publications began, what has been the biggest change or in your learning about journalism?
That is a big question.
What have we learned about journalism?
Or about how the changes have impacted what you've learned about it.
I mean, I touched on it already. We kind of came into this with a hope and a prayer that it would work. I have been absolutely flabbergasted by the level of success that we can have. I mean, truly, the numbers of people who read our work is on par. When I worked at the World Herald, I thought that was the biggest bullhorn Nebraska would ever have. I thought I would reach more people there than I ever could any other way. Now I have learned that it was an incorrect assumption. You can start a thing and you can immediately reach that big of an audience or bigger. I never expect that would be the case.
Yeah. I was amazed. At the end of our first year, we had 2.3 million page views of our product, and I was just staggered. And even from the beginning, just at the rate at which our daily newsletter subscribers rose, and we started getting donations before we even launched, which is another amazing thing to me. And it's just kept going. And so, yeah, I think that's the biggest surprise to me as well is how rapidly people came to know us. I remember back in our first week, well, we kind of had maybe a month to ramp up and get some stories going, so that on day one, January 25th, we had a healthy looking news site. And Cindy, we were talking in a group meeting one day, and she said, you know, it's kind of a pain because I have to spend the first 10 minutes of every interview explaining what in the world the Nebraska Examiner is. And I am not kidding you. 1 week after launching, she said, oh my God, everybody knows who we are.
Yeah.
I don't have to explain it anymore. So it was great.
Is the Nebraska Stories that is on NET an indication that TV journalism is still alive and kicking and doing well nationally in Nebraska?
Well, I think we have some strong broadcast journalism going on still. And we have all of, you know, we still have newspapers and broadcast stations that are not nonprofit. But I think the fact that we have that nonprofit angle is a credit to Nebraska. And I do think there's a lot of strong journalism going on in all those venues or whatever you want to call them, mediums.
Nebraska is absolutely blessed by a good journalistic court. We always have had that. To the specific question about broadcast, I think there's maybe a misconception that it is healthy and fine and not affected by all this stuff, and that is simply not true. Mm-hmm. The way, you know, with newspapers, we talk about circulation, and everyone can say circulation is down. In broadcast, whether it be on radio, and you know this very well, whether it be on radio or TV, they talk about market share. Well, that's a devious little number, isn't it? Now we talk about how many of all the people watching or listening, what percent listen to us? They don't talk about how big the pie is, right? And so the metric is just a little, I'm a data guy, so I know, right, that can, you've got to look at the devil in the details sort of thing. They are still, it's true, the journalism that they produce, the teams, the hires they make, all that sort of stuff is killer. They are investing. Well, you know, I think
it's shrinking.
But it's shrinking, just like everywhere else.
Like print journalism.
Right.
Yeah.
When you have a story that's breaking that can be controversial, what's the process that you go through to make sure that what you're putting out is accurate, not biased, and will stand up to the scrutiny of both the topic, the subject of your examination, or your readers?
How long do we have?
we've got 20 minutes.
Well, I mean, breaking news in particular is a challenge because even though we're nonprofit and we're not supposed to be competitive, we're journalists and we can't help it. So you want to get out there first, but you don't want to get out there first wrong. And so you really have to work carefully, reporters and editors together, to determine, okay, what can we say? What are we confident of? What's still wobbly and we don't want to go there yet? And so you just, you know, you build it based on what you can confirm. That's kind of the bottom line for journalism. You try to talk to not just people who are making an accusation, but the people who are being accused. And you talk to other people, depending on the story. You know, one story might need 3 or 4 sources. One story might need 20 sources because you really need to figure out what the truth is. And, you know, you just don't want to get burned on bad information.
Yeah. We don't do breaking news. That competitive thing, I was never good at that, Kate will tell you. And I'm still not good at it, and this newsroom doesn't even play that game. All we do is enterprise. All we do is investigations and features, and the beauty of that is that we can say, we're not publishing anything today, we're not publishing this until it's ready. We've got something else we can run, and we'll run this when it gets there. And so that fact-checking process for us is disgusting. We go through really, when you read a story the right way, you sometimes will gloss over facts. You've looked at that fact 500 times. You know it to be true. You know where it came from. When you read something backwards, they all stick out a little more. You get past that narrative. So that's part we do. We circle numbers and where did this come from? Who said this? Do we need to attribute this? Is this a fact that we know because we read it in a document? If so, let's say that we read it. In fact, let's give that document to our readers, right? Let's make sure they know where we got it. Is this something somebody said? Well, then let's make sure we have their name. And by the way, no anonymous sources. We don't play that game. Unless there's some, you know, we have an ethics policy that we publish that spells out things. When we, our approach to anonymous sources is never, ever, ever, unless you're a kid and we think you're newsworthy because you shouldn't be held accountable. You know, you go through those things with a fine tooth comb, the same process that you and I did at the World Herald forever. You make sure that every single thing is bulletproof, rock solid, you know where it came from, you feel confident that it's not. If it is sour grapes, you've got somebody saying that's sour grapes, you just report the bejesus out of the entire thing. There's no secret sauce to this. We both have worked with lawyers, too. There's times when a story is so potentially inflammatory that you want to make sure you've got an adult in the room who can tell you, there be dragons, make sure you talk to this person, or honestly, even just tell you, this line here, I'm not going to tell you not to run it because it's journalistically defensible, but just so you know, this is where your exposure lies. And that's, you need that.
Well, the question is the importance of what you are doing, what kind of feedback are you getting? And I guess I would expand that a little more. Watching political rallies where people are pointing at and calling reporters fake news, lamestream media, and all that sort of thing. Are you getting that kind of comment back for some of your reporting, and how do you deal with that?
Yes, I mean, we have people saying nasty, writing nasty grams on social media. That's where it comes in to play the most. People will write occasionally, and I always respond. But I mean, you just move on, and we just try to get our message out. I don't know of any special thing that we can do except more of the same and communicate. And if there is an error, we correct that error, and we tell people we're correcting that error, because I think that's part of the transparency that's so important in journalism. We don't want to come off like we're perfect, because we're not, but we definitely stand behind the work that we do.
And we want it to be right. I mean, that's why we run those corrections. If we get something wrong, we admit it. That is our job. That's always been our job. We say we got it wrong, we put the right information in there, and we note forever, because we are legally required to note forever what we got, that we did have an error in this story. That's something that I think a lot of people don't understand about this craft, right? You can get sued for libel, you can get sued for slander, you have to be rock solid and make sure that everything is nailed down. And part of that is making sure that your corrections are in place. If you've got a reporter who has 10 corrections in 5 stories, legally, your insurance is going to go up if you keep them on. There is a check and balance to this system that I think we all kind of ignore.
It is, I mean, it is more difficult now than it used to be, though, especially in the field of politics. I think people feel they have the right to spread any kind of nasty rumor or assumption that they feel like, and they bully people. After we ran the story last year about Charles Herbster and how 8 young women had accused him of groping them, within 2 weeks, I want to say, Donald Trump came to town to do a rally, and the same reporter who did that story went to cover the rally, and we talked about it. We thought, okay, is this going to be safe? Are you worried? I wanted to protect him as much as I could. I told him he didn't have to go, but he felt like he did have to go just because of all of this. And so and at a Trump rally, you don't just mingle with the crowd anyway. They put you in a little fenced off coop and you stand there and that's it. But he did talk the biggest broadcast cameraman into walking back to his car with him afterwards just as a precaution, but nothing happened. And it is Nebraska, and I like to think that we're still mostly reasonable people here. So I'm probably wrong.
this is a little OT on this question, but it's something that's been on my mind a lot lately. And I like to bring it up because it's one party. Like, it's not saying one party's better than the other. This is in the same party. But I don't know if anyone saw last week, the DeSantis campaign has started releasing doctored images. Obviously, on purpose, fake images of Donald Trump and Anthony Fauci shaking hands, hugging, all these sorts of things. They are not hiding the fact that this is fake, but they are using it in promotional materials. Wow. How do we as an industry, how do we as a society even begin to deal with when politicians are purposely leaning in and openly, right? In the past, when things would be slightly spun or off kilter or whatever, they would at least try to hide it or say they had a reason for that. But now they're openly willing to embrace. Is lying the right word? I feel like lying might be the right word. And it's not necessarily bad for their campaign. I don't know how we, as journalists, as society, these are kind of nesting dolls of problems that we need to deal with. It's a complete game changer. Call us fake news. Do they actually believe that we're fake news, or do they just think that's part of the fun of going to a rally? I don't know.
I don't know. I do think that we have people from across the political spectrum who come to our site, and so they must trust us to some degree, and And I think that's what we have to keep striving for.
Yeah. And I do think that, you know, part of our reason to do those feature stories from across Nebraska was, yes, we didn't want to be jerks. But it's also very practical. It's easy to spin even a policy story as being political one way or the other. And in fact, they're not. And I feel confident we've never done that. That's not how we're going to roll. But when you're doing a story about, I don't know, a pie salesman in a small town in Nebraska and how their dream and how they achieve their dream and all that sort of stuff, good luck assigning politics to that. That's just a good story, right? And everyone can agree, Republican, Democrat, I don't care who you vote for president, you know that's a good story. You're going to drive up there and get some pie. Who doesn't love apple? Fine, there's key lime too, right? There's a Nebraskan-ness that we share, that we have lost, that we can get back through journalism. And I so believe in that. That's core of what we're doing here.
I was interested in you, when you said you get thousands of people reading your articles. That would seem to suggest that people are still hungry for straightforward and honest news. And I'm wondering then if that means that you're going to expand, or maybe you already are expanded beyond Nebraska with stories and that kind of thing. Are you seeing that? Are you getting hits from other locations?
Sure. I mean, I could pull up right now our traffic on the site, and you'll see dots all over the country. That's always, I mean, a reporter for ProPublica retweeted our story today, so we're getting national attention right now. But coverage-wise, I have no interest. We're the Nebraska Journalism Trust. You're the Nebraska Examiner.
Right.
That's our border. That's what we care about. With Silicon Prairie News, I will say it was a consideration. We acquired that property. They were covering Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, and Missouri. And when we acquired it, we made the decision, yeah, sorry. Sorry, Kansas. Love you. I don't actually love Kansas. I went to the University of Missouri. That was an easy choice. But Missouri was a little tougher. We are Nebraska. I think that is a brand that we can get behind and support. I think it's good to know as much what you are as what you aren't. And I draw the line right there at that river.
Yeah. I will say one thing I like about being part of State's newsroom is that I do have people across the nation doing the type of reporting we're doing. And sometimes I find what they're doing, I feel like it would be of interest to Nebraska readers. And so I will pick up a story from Kansas or South Dakota or New Mexico or wherever it is. And so it's neat to be a part of this network. And I was just tallying up the numbers the other day to see, it's like, I feel like we're writing a lot of stories. How many have we written? And so by to date, well, I didn't count today's, but to date yesterday, we published 592 locally written stories. That's by my little staff. But through the year or same time period, total stories we've run has been about 1,000. So those are commentaries from Nebraska or national stories. State's Newsroom has a Washington Bureau and they do great work. And so I will pick up their coverage. And we have some national reporters who are working on issues such as economy and environment, energy, things like that. And I'll pick up some of theirs. So, but I come back to the fact that 1,000 stories in mid-June is a lot, but the fact that 60% of those stories were produced by my 3.5 reporters is pretty amazing.
And I think it gets to why I am so excited, and I think why we were invited here today. We are, for the first time in recent history, this is hiring journalists in Nebraska to report on Nebraska. You don't have to look, what was this, a couple weeks ago? That Fox station here in Nebraska, in Omaha,
yes,
laid off their local reporting staff. They're done with that. And we are simply, that is what
and
corporate
the reader
journalism
is,
does.
The reader, is closing.
Bless their
yes.
hearts.
Yeah.
We are, you know, corporate media, the reader's a different story. Corporate media with Fox and with local radio even, they see journalism as interchangeable. If it comes from New York or Washington, D.C. or somewhere in Kansas, God forbid, they see that as being just as good as what can be produced locally, and we are saying absolutely not. It has to be in Nebraska, by Nebraska, for Nebraska, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah. One of the questions I was hesitant to ask, but I'll ask you,
He's
is
run
what's
out.
Your relationship with the World Herald? because you both were there and have been through all kinds of things with the World Herald.
Yeah.
And many of my former reporters are still there. And Paul Goodsell, who's the executive editor now, I don't think he's worked for me when he first started, but pretty soon after that. So we've known each other for a long, long time. So in terms of relationships, I think of people, and I still have relationships with good people at the World Herald. They, for some reason, have not chosen to use the Nebraska Examiner stories, except the times they're forced to, because we were the only ones doing the reporting on this or that issue. But I hope that'll change someday, too.
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes for both Kate and I, it's personal, right? I wanted to work there on purpose. I thought that's where I was going to go. We love those people. We love that institution. We love its role in this community. We root for them. I really view part of our role, the Nebraska Journalism Trust, is to be a cheerleader for good journalism of all kinds, right? When we put out our newsletter on Friday, it's got a couple stories from us. It also has some good stories from usually the World Herald, usually the Nebraska Public Media, usually the Examiner. They are just one of a large group of people doing good journalism in Nebraska, and we should root for them and support them and all that stuff. Same with KIOS, where some people might be hearing this.
Other than not taking stories outside of Nebraska, are there topics or subjects that you will say, we're not going to run a story on that?
Well, at the Examiner, we have a fairly narrow mission, really. We're focused on state news and state issues. We pull in a few other things, but usually there's some state component to it. So we've been asked to do any number of stories, and I have to turn them down because it's very local in scope. And like I say, I have 3.5 people, and there's only so much they can do. They do twice as much as I ever think they should or could. But yeah, I turn down things if it doesn't conform to that kind of little universe that we have.
For us, one of the big litmus tests is someone else going to do this? We do view our role. We are not competitive. That's just not the role that we have. If the World Herald is going to cover it, and we know they're going to cover it, and they're going to do it, then we're not going to touch that thing. If we believe that there's still a universal story beyond that, then we might circle back to it. But we try not to be, like, if someone sends us a press release, they have made a terrible mistake. There's zero chance we're going to run that. If they invite us to a press conference, unless they were going to ask some hard-hitting question that they don't want us to ask, we're not going to show up. So that's the first thing. I will say that gets a little squishy. There have been times, one of the first stories that one of my reporters did was about a town called Alvo, which has 100 people. And Alvo had this incredible thing happen where there was we all know the rules of recall petitions. We live in Omaha, right? We're intimately familiar. You only need so many people to sign the thing. In a town of 100, it's a lot easier. You get your couple of buddies and mission accomplished. What happened there, though, is that these village boards said, yeah, you raised enough signatures, but we're not going to do it. We don't have the money. That is a failure of democracy, right? That is a big picture, universal story that honestly resonates from California to New York and Florida. You know, that has big legs if you tell it the right way. That story had been written. That story had been written well. The blow-by-blow of what happened was there. But Yen-Chi made a case that she thought there was that larger, more universal thing. And I didn't believe her, and I thought she couldn't do it. And you know what? She knocked it out of the park. And that got, 25,000 people read that story in the first week or something like that. I mean, yeah, sometimes there is a bigger, more universal story. We think that we can do that with our collaborate, not compete ethos. We've done it successfully, I think. I mean, unless someone's talking meanly behind our backs. But we do try to do it. We do it earnestly. We do support our journalism ecosystem to the greatest degree that we can because we mean it. And we mean it with our work, too, with how we choose our stories, to your question.
The last two election cycles, we've had politicians in Nebraska who chose not to take part in debates. Our current governor has even suggested that his calendar will be sent to only particular people to get people to. Do you get invitations to attend those kinds of rallies, or how do you manage to get reports on those?
Yeah, I mean, we We don't simply rely on the governor's office for our news. We have these things called sources, and they tell us things. So, but it is a disappointment to see a pullback on the amount of information that's made public by our publicly paid elected officials.
I also, though, think that's part of what journalism should do is fight that stuff. We have to fight that stuff, right? That if we don't do it, no one else is going to do it. If the claim is that calendars are not public, I guess we'll view it like our journalism, right? We'll wait and see if someone else will do it. We'll hope and pray that someone else will do it. And if it gets to the point where it needs to be fought, you know, we can fight it. We are embroiled in a lawsuit right now with the Nebraska Department of Environment and Energy, who we requested some records from them. We worked with them. They quoted us $2,000. We said, well, gee, that seems a little outrageous. They said, well, actually, it'll be more than that. And then by the time it all got wrapped up, they said it'll be $41,000, $45,000, $44,000. I don't remember. A gigantic number. And so we sued, right? I did not want to do that. That was not our first step. But we sued, and we won, and now we're in an appeals process. But like that fight has got to be, we cannot just take these things laying down. The role of the journalism is to be the fourth estate, not some baby estate that's waiting for the governor to tell us what to cover. That's not the game. That's not what we're doing here. We need to be fighting for our access, for being treated like adults, for representing society, and I think we're nailing that.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for being here today and for sharing with us. We'll have a couple of closing remarks for our audience, and I want to thank the audience as well for being here today and for our radio audience as well. Our next program will be on July 20th, and it'll be here at the club, and our speaker will be Sherry Kennedy Brownwig, who will on July 1st begin her tenure as general manager of KVNO FM 90.7, UNO's classical music station. Kind of as a personal touch for us because the current manager, Chris Allen, who's retiring from that position and is also a member of our education committee. A reminder that today's program will be aired on KIOS 91.5 FM, July 1st at 6 a.m., and will also be available via podcast and can be found on the KIOS website. Again, thank you so much for attending. We hope that you will come back often. And we are adjourned.
You've been listening to The Weekend Forum, a production of KIOS News. Today's program was presented by the Omaha Press Club on Thursday, June 16th, 2023, and featured Kate Folsom, the editor-in-chief of Nebraska Examiner, and Matt Wynn, executive director of Flatwater Free Press. This episode was produced by me, Joshua LeBure. You can hear this episode again at our website, KIOS.org. You can hear this episode again at our website, KIOS.org, or you can find more information about the Omaha Press Club's noon education forums at omahapressclub.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for the next Omaha Forum. To conclude this hour, here's a presentation of ambient music from our show Ambiology, where Topher Booth and myself, Joshua LeBure, explore modern ambient and experimental music, Sunday nights at midnight, here on KIOS. This is Ambient 4 by a name that doesn't exist yet.